Yesterday was a busy day here at St. Jude's. We had a wedding here at 1 o'clock, and it happened to be my 8th wedding of the year so far. I was able to enter into this year, January 1st, celebrating the wedding of one of my friends, and then yesterday was number 8, and I'm just over the hump. I've got 7 more to go. So 15 weddings that I'll be able to celebrate this year. And I recognize that's a bit of an oddity. As a priest, I get to see a lot more things than the usual faithful do. I remember even a few years ago, I was at Hy-Vee, I think, down in Apple Valley, and buying some groceries, and the cashier was a high school boy, and he actually asked, "What are you doing today?" You don't get that a whole lot from a cashier, especially a high schooler. So I took that opportunity. I said, "Well, I'm celebrating a wedding later today." And I remember him telling me, "I've never been to a wedding." Like, whoa, really? Like, I've probably been to more weddings this year already than a lot of people do their whole life. And it's one of the great joys of my life to be able to witness a man and a woman exchange vows, giving their lives and giving their love over to one another. It's a beautiful thing to witness. If you've been to weddings, of course, you know what it's like. There's lots of smiles, huh? There's lots of tears, but they're tears of joy because of what's being represented here right in front of us. Now, of course, we know that Christian marriage is on the decline. You know, I'll be at 15 weddings this year, but that's a lot lower even than it should be. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there were lots more weddings. There were a lot more marriages happening. So it's really a crisis of culture and a crisis in our church that we want to be encouraging men and women to enter into that loving sacrament. So many delay it, but of the 15 weddings that I'll be able to celebrate this year, some will be friends of mine. That's probably like a handful, but the other 11 are right here in our church. Like I said, I'm already at number 8 this year, but a few of those were probably what you'd call non-traditional weddings or a convalidation. Maybe you've heard that word before, a marriage blessing, a convalidation. That's when we sacramentalize a union that's already taken place. For some reason or another, a man and a woman get married outside the church, and then at some point in their journey, they approach me and they approach the church and say, "We want the graces of the sacrament in this wedding, in this marriage." And that's actually a great joy for me to be able to walk with couples in this way. It's not the 20-somethings. It's usually a couple that's a little bit older. They're more mature. They've lived a life together for a while, and they want more. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to walk with those couples, to sacramentalize, to bless their weddings, their unions, and bring those into the fullness of communion with the church to give them that more that they're asking for. Now, of course, the church is very interested in marriage. Maybe some would accuse us of being too interested in marriage, that we talk about it too much. But it is something of high importance in our faith. It's something that we take really seriously, and we've done this all the way from the beginning, from our infant days of the church in that first century. We even hear about it in our first reading from the Acts of the Apostles today. We hear about marriage. It actually is listed as one of the necessities for having communion with the rest of the body of the church. In those first few years after Christ had died and risen from the dead and ascended into the heaven, the church was left with lots of questions to answer. And one of the questions they're asking today, what is it that a Gentile has to do to become a member of the church? You see, the church at its start, at its infancy, was only Jewish people. And so they followed still the Jewish law. But then they had to ask the question, well, is that fair to impose the Jewish law on these Gentiles, those outside of the body, to come into us? And so they asked, well, what's of necessity? And so they had this council, the first council of Jerusalem. We heard a little bit about it in the reading. They had this debate. The apostles, those members of the early church, they had to discuss it. What's of necessity? Is it something on the exterior, like circumcision? That's what made a person a member of the house of Israel. But is that necessary for a Gentile to come into the Christian church? And they answer, no. It's not some external thing like circumcision, and all the Gentiles rejoiced. But then they get a letter to Paul and Silas, Paul and Barnabas. Paul and Barnabas were living in Antioch, ministering to the Gentiles, and the apostles and the members of the church, the elders, were in Jerusalem. So the Jerusalem apostles send this letter to Antioch, to Paul and Barnabas. And we have that letter preserved in the Acts of the Apostles. This letter that they spell out, this is what we believe not to be too burdensome for a Gentile to take on when he comes into the Christian church. And so they write, it is the decision of the Holy Spirit and of us not to place on you any burden beyond these necessities. And they list just a few. That you would abstain from meat sacrificed to idols. That seems to be a good decision. We don't want to be involved in idolatry or any worship of an alien god. That you would abstain from blood, from meats of strangled animals, and from unlawful marriage. They only list a few things, and one of them is that we want you to be in a lawful marriage. This is from the first century of the Christian church. We've upheld this dignity, this great respect for lawful marriage, and so we want to make sure we get marriage right. Because it's something that would exclude a person from full communion with the Christian body. Why is this? Why is it so important? Why is it so important? Why is it actually a precept of the church for a Catholic to be married within the church that I have to sacramentalize or convalidate a marriage that's happened outside the church? Why is it so important to get right? Well, we have to recognize marriage, all those marriages I celebrate right here in our church month after month are reflections of a greater reality that we can't see. And if we don't get the reality that we can see right, then we won't get the reality that we can't see right. You see, every marriage between a man and a woman is a reflection of God's love for his people. Jesus, the bridegroom, giving himself to his bride, the church. And we want to get that right. We want to get that union between God and his people right. And this is why we hold marriage as such a high thing in our society and in our church, because we want to get both of these right. And Jesus reveals a bit of that today in the gospel in his discussion with his disciples at the Last Supper. Now, this is situated in John's Gospel in chapter 14, right before Jesus would give himself to them in his flesh. This is my body, this is my blood, take it, do this in remembrance of me. And then the next day, Good Friday, he'd offer his life on the cross for his bride, and then rise from the dead on Easter Sunday. And he gives them nuptial words here at the Last Supper, right as he's giving his body to them. He says, if you love me, keep my word, and my Father will love you, and we will come to you and make our dwelling with you. Those are intimate nuptial words from Jesus. He wants to make his dwelling with us. He says, I'm going to go away, but I'm going to come back for you. And I'm going to take you to that dwelling. Isn't this what a bridegroom does? A bridegroom lays down his life for his bride. He goes and builds a dwelling or buys some kind of house to bring his bride to. And Jesus speaks these words to that infant church. I want to dwell with you. I want to live with you. I want to set up a house with you. That's what a bridegroom does with his bride. They set up a house so that they can live there in communion with one another. Even in the book of Revelation today, we hear an image of that heavenly house. St. John the Apostle has this image, this vision of the house that the bridegroom has set up for us, this heavenly dwelling that will come down, this new Jerusalem with walls and gates and a lamb and a place for us to live with the Lord. So Jesus sets up this place for us in heaven, but it's a place that doesn't just reside in heaven. It's a place that comes to us here on earth too. And that's really the Lord's invitation to each of us. He doesn't wait to be with us just in heaven. He wants to come to us now. And so important the sacraments that we celebrate in our times of worship, in our times of prayer, our time of the Holy Mass, when the Lord sets before us a wedding banquet that we celebrate with all the angels and the saints worshiping in heaven. Right now, the union between the bridegroom and the bride, the Lord with his people. That's where the Lord wants to come to us. He wants to come to us right now as he again gives us his body and his blood, as Jesus the bridegroom comes to the church. And we want to take that seriously. We want to make sure there's nothing in me that would preclude me from that banquet, from receiving the Lord, from me dwelling with him. Just as there was those necessities at the early church, you can't worship false gods, you can't eat food worship to false gods, you have to be in a lawful marriage. So we ought to examine ourselves. What is it in me that might need to be set aside so that I can enjoy that union with the bridegroom? And so that's where the place of invitation comes today. Lord, what is it in me that might be preventing me from you? And give me the grace to set it aside, that I would live with you, that you would live with me, and that we would enjoy that intimate communion. So brothers and sisters, let's come to that banquet today. Let's leave anything that would prevent us aside and come into the Father's house.